Welcome to the Fleming Foundation's podcast. I'm Rex, and sitting across the table from me in the stately mansion that is the Fleming Foundation is Dr. Thomas Fleming.
High atop Telegraph Hill.
Yes, in the library, because have you read all these books? Did you really read all these books?
Just about. Certainly, some of them are books more for use than for reading, but I've at least opened and smelled. My old boss, Leopold Tiermond, first editor of Chronicles, used to say, I do not have to read a book. I just open it up and sniff. I have a nose. And I'd look at him, he had one of the biggest Hebraic noses I've ever seen.
Okay, so he could sniff out a good story.
He did have a nose, yeah.
I might have went into journalism. You know, that's what they say about those guys. Well, this is March, and we're still in March, and we're marching on with that. Yes, wait for it. Yes, it's the birthday special.
Yesterday, when I was young, the taste of life was sweet as rain upon my tongue. I teased at life as if it were a foolish game, the way the evening breeze may tease a candle flame.
We're in the last part of March, and we're going to give you a bunch of people. And you know, again, please feel free to comment on your favorite people in March, or if you think the doctor may have strayed from the truth, or on rare occasion myself not knowing what I'm talking about. Well, the first guy is a musician, and you know, I'm a musician as well, but I don't know if I was as good as this guy. Johann Sebastian Bach in 1685 was born March 21st. What do you got to say about Bach?
Not much.
Oh.
H.L. Mencken once did this parody about trying to describe what musicians were like, and he said Debussy was like a beautiful girl with one blue eye and one brown. Puccini was exquisitely tangled spaghetti. And so Bach, he said, Genesis 1-1.
Genesis 1-1?
Yeah. You know.
In the beginning?
Yeah, in the beginning, you know. Yeah.
God created heaven and earth?
Yeah. In other words, there was a fundamental majesty about Bach that is impossible to compare with any other composer. I must say that I am not an exclusive Bach lover. I think Bach is among the three or four great composers that
I thought you said he was a thief.
No. I said he creatively borrowed, which as every musician of those days did. When you're writing the tremendous output that Bach had, you know, he had to write something like a religious service every week, not to mention the keyboard music he did, orchestral music. He's phenomenal, and I guess maybe my favorite stuff is his unaccompanied violin music and also things like his French suites and partitas for the keyboard. Anyway, it's a very
great
composer.
And the Beatles did a tribute to him, Get Bach.
Didn't Ringo hang out with a girl named Barbara Bach for a while?
Yeah.
That's their tribute. Yeah. Anyway, the 21st is also the birth date of somebody I know everybody will recognize. His name was Maxwell Henry Aronson. Maxwell Henry Aronson was born to Jewish emigre parents who came to America. Under the name Bronco Billy, he became the first cowboy star in American film. He got a job working in a couple of roles in The Great Train Robbery, and he liked it so well, he not only became an actor, the first great Western movies, well, great, they were first very popular Western movies, but he went on to direct and write. And he was a very irascible sort, so he was always retiring and damning his partners. Coming out of retirement, he did produce the first Laurel and Hardy combined film. So that's something.
And Clint Eastwood did a movie called Bronco Billy,
yes,
I guess.
You know, that's actually my favorite Clint Eastwood movie.
Really?
Yeah. Someday we should talk about it, but it's the scene in which the people in the madhouse sew together a tent out of American flags. I think it's almost worthy of the great Federico Fellini. It's very, very lovely. On the 21st also, the Emperor Heraclius, who was an East Roman emperor, who defeated a usurper, threw him out, defeated the Persian Empire, and overthrew it. And in doing that, he got hold of the true cross, which the Persians had stolen from Jerusalem, and he returned the true cross.
So wait a minute. Are you telling me that they have a piece of the original cross of which Jesus Christ was crucified on, the true cross? They have that cross. Is that real?
Well, okay, it may not be real. Let's just speak in purely secular terms. Heraclius knew that he was getting the cross, or the pieces of the cross that the Persians had stolen from Jerusalem when they had conquered it. That cross was one of three which had been dug up at the orders of the mother of Constantine, Helena.
And
that would have been about 320 AD. So 3 centuries later, people in Jerusalem who believe they remembered the various things about the incident, you know, that carried on through oral tradition. So even if it's not true, these fragments have been venerated for 1,700 years consistently.
That is totally cool. Another artist that was born on the 22nd in 1887. Yes, it's Chico Marx, and what an artist he was. That guy could play piano like nobody I ever saw.
We're going to play a little classical number. We're going to play the second movement from the Beer Barrel Polka.
Yes, having seen all the Marx Brothers 10 times, and we just recently watched one of their last good movies. It's 22nd is also the date in 1765 in which the Stamp Act was passed, taxing documents, all legal documents in the New World. And it was resistance to the Stamp Act that brought out James Otis' famous declaration in court that taxation without representation is tyranny.
Yes,
John Adams later on said that was the beginning of the American Revolution. That is, 10 years before the revolution actually broke out, it was Otis's principled stand on a good old Whig principle, which is that the people have to consent to their own taxation.
Now, the Stamp Act then wasn't a thing where they said, okay, everybody's got to put a little sticker on your mail in order to get it from place to place.
No, these were stamps that were used for legal documents. That is, you want to sign a deed, it's got to have a stamp. It's like what would today go to a notary public.
Yes.
But in those days, any transfer of property would be, including a bill of lading and things like that, these all had to be stamped. So it was a real imposition on the merchant class in New England under the Stamp Act, and later on under the Cider Act, the Tea Act. All of these allowed the agents of the British government to go into a warehouse to see, do you have the proper documents? Have you paid the proper tax? Many merchants in Boston and in New England in general, the shop or their warehouse was part of their house. So what you had was the spectacle of red-coated British soldiers with gun in hand breaking into somebody's house. Do you have your papers? Now, this was extremely unpopular because an Englishman's home, as a famous British politician said at the time in reaction to this, said an Englishman's home is his castle. And by that, he meant that a fortified place that the king may not enter unless you've committed a felony. You can't just go and collect back taxes. Anyway, it's a very important date.
Yeah, I guess.
Fanny Farmer was born on the 23rd.
Okay.
She is authoress of the Boston Cooking School cookbook, which was the first sort of serious scientific cookbook. It goes back to the early 20th century. She pioneered exact measurements and times in cooking. Because up until then, you were supposed to know how to cook. And you learned how to cook from your mother or your sister or your aunt. And then what you had was a recipe book, which would just say, fried chicken until done and pour cream sauce over it. And you're supposed to know how to do those things.
Right.
And frankly, I prefer the good old days when a good cook was somebody who worked by knowledge and experience rather than looking things up. And now that people can look things up online, it's a nightmare, the stuff I see on the internet.
But well, it would be tough to cook by a fire that doesn't have a specific temperature. You can't say that all fires are 350 degrees, which is where most recipes are cooked at. So there's got to have some experience.
I can cook outdoors. Over an open fire, outdoors, on camping trips, since I was about 8 years old.
Huh, maybe you should write a camping cooking book.
Why not?
That sounds like a good idea.
What about the 24th?
Oh, there's somebody special. Yes, this person has endured great trial and tribulation, and to this day continues in her trials and tribulations. It's my wife, Robin.
Well, speaking of women, long-suffering women, a lady named Gail Clark was born in Wiesbaden, Germany in 1947. Hmm. Her brother, when she was young, kept on reminding her that she had the right to claim German citizenship, which meant she would have to be repatriated to her country. Hmm. Unfortunately, she chose American citizenship and was foolish enough to choose me as her life's companion.
Oh!
So it is Gail Clark Fleming's birthday today.
Your wife and my wife had the same birthday?
Does that mean we're married, Rex?
We've got to be relatives. Wow, that is really bizarre. Who would have known?
We were fated. It's also the date, by the way, in which in 1603 on the 24th, James VI, King of Scotland, became James I of England on the death of Queen Elizabeth.
Did they have to get permission to change their names? I mean, all of a sudden you got all these guys that are changing their names, and that was really confusing also, like in Shakespeare when we were doing that seminar. Who is that guy? Is the guy that had the name before? And then they had the same names. Very confusing. Who does that?
Well, they did it because the titles, you see, are inherited when you die or succeed to an office. James was the sixth king of that name in Scotland, but coming to England, he was the first king of that name in England. So the Scots always called him James the Sixth and First.
Because that makes more sense.
Pointing out that he was.
Yeah, yeah. A great magician that started it all, I think, in America at least, Harry Houdini.
Yeah, but he's not an American. Houdini, where was he born? Was he Romanian or where was he?
This podcast to bring you the facts. Ever the illusionist, Houdini maintained his professional years that he had been born in Appleton, Wisconsin on April 6, 1874. In reality, he had been born March 24, 1874 in Budapest, Hungary, and was a naturalized U.S. citizen. His father was a lawyer who became a rabbi when he moved the family to America. That is all.
Yeah, anyway, he's born more in Central Europe.
1874, and he did that water thing where they put him in a tank, lowered him in the ocean, and then he escaped magically. Also, he had a deal with his wife, and they had a secret code that if either one of them died when they were on the other side, they would use that to either find out whether the afterlife was real, and also used it to debunk all these people that were saying they were mediums and able to go to the other side.
Houdini was a practitioner of a craft, and he hated the spiritualists and bunko artists who used his sorts of tricks, but then claimed to be working tricks of the spirit. He was a real cynic, a little bit like in our own time. There was a professional magician called the Amazing Randy, and he would debunk people like Uri Geller, the Israeli spiritualist who would bend spoons and things. There is this thread among hardcore artists, but they're not bogus.
Agreed.
And on the 25th, also, one of the greatest women in history, St. Catherine of Siena, was born in 1347. St. Catherine's an amazing person. She was born to a poor family, therefore didn't learn Latin, and so she becomes the first writer of prose in Italian.
Oh.
She was very strange, very self-denying, probably starved herself to death. Her confessor warned her that she had become habituated to fasting and that she was what we would now call anorexic.
Oh.
But despite all of the weirdness about Catherine, she was also a woman of enormous practical wisdom. When she told the Pope it's time to go back to Rome, she was used for diplomatic purposes because of her enormous wisdom, and much of her writings have been passed down to us, a wise, deep, and powerful woman.
This is a person who probably, if you'd have seen his earlier career, you would have thought that he wanted to be born a woman. Many, many, many hit songs. Everybody knows him as Elton John. Yes, he was born on the 25th, 1947. So many songs. Whether y'all hate him or love him, he's a good songwriter. Bernie Taupin, is that what the other guy?
Yeah, Bernie Taupin actually, I think, is the songwriting. Taupin writes the lyrics, and the lyrics are actually, I think, cleverly written. And when I was becoming an expert on the meters of Greek drama, I was listening to a lot of pop music, looking for analogies because of the complexities. There's a song where the rhythm of the lyric, it's called I Guess That's Why They Call It the Blues.
Ah.
And you see, we don't have that rhythm in English, but it's called the Ionicus A minore. Da-da-dum-dum, da-da-dum-dum, da-da-dum-dum. And then you can make one of them catalectic by cutting off. So that's that. I guess that's why they call it the blues.
And I guess that's why they call it the blues. Time on my hands, good time spent with you. Laughing like children, living like lovers.
Right.
Time on my hand. But, you know, this would have fit in as a lyric in Sophocles. That is the metrical structure.
That is amazing.
And Taupin, he's a clever songwriter. I loathe Elton John for about a million good reasons. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have to give credit where it's due. The two of them put together songs that aren't just hits, but songs that people treasure. Some of them are disgusting, but still, they have ability.